I'm using the microphone for the video, not necessarily because you can't hear my voice. But if anyone can't hear my voice, just wait. 10 minutes. What the hell? Yeah, I concentrate on in 10 minutes. What I think I will do is just set some of the background about the direction of travel that the food system needs to go in to be sustainable. And that is not directly addressing the question of poverty, but that will come in very much to what happens as a result of what I'm talking about. So to start off with, we have an agri-food system which is completely not fit for purpose moving into the future, although it has been relatively good to us over the last 20 or 30 years. The reason it's not good fit for purpose for the future, I'll go through. This is a table, and I won't get lost in the details, from a recent paper, and there are a number of papers in this direction, which are looking ahead at the way things are travelling in terms of food. And this paper is looking at a whole range of different scenarios, and I'll concentrate on two: the business as usual scenario, CP1, and another scenario, YG3, which is about adopting healthy diets, reducing waste, and some technological improvement. And this is just a table from the paper that highlights some of the things. And I just want to draw your eyes to. By 2050, if our business as usual model continues, that's with current rates of yield growth, current rates of demand growth, the food system will require 120% more water for irrigation on a global basis. And already, agri-food takes 70% of all the water that is extracted from rivers and ground. 120% on top of that 70% is just impossible, whatever you think of irrigation efficiency. Likewise, if you look at greenhouse gas emissions, the business as usual scenario would put an increase in greenhouse gas emissions of 77% on top of global agri-food at the moment. That is enough emission to account for 2 degrees of global warming by itself, which is what the world has signed up to as a safe limit. 2 degrees would come from agri-food alone if we carry on the direction of travel that we're currently moving in. And if you contrast that with a transformative scenario where we eat healthily, we reduce waste, and there is some technological improvement, we could reduce the greenhouse gas emissions. At the moment, agri-food is the biggest emitting sector across transport, energy, etc. Second reason business as usual is not an option is increasingly the world is homogenous. We eat rather a lot of rather few things, so 2/3 of the world's calories come from wheat, rice, and maize. That leads to very large scale agriculture, and that has a risk associated with world climate change and pests and disease and emergence. And this is a map, effectively, of global diets. Where points are a long way apart, then diets are a long way apart, and each point is a country. And as you can see, from the 1960s through to the 2000s, the global diet has become more constrained. Everybody's diets have changed, but everywhere in the world we're eating more or less the same thing coming out of big agriculture. Wherever you go, you can get Indian, you can get pizza, you can get McDonald's or whatever. We're all eating more or less the same thing, and with that comes a whole range of risks. Third reason is that the world is changing very fast, particularly with climate change. We're currently on course for a world that is 4 degrees hotter by the end of the century, and that's on average day and night, land and sea, across a year. The sea is going to be cooler than the land in terms of the 4 degree increase, and as you can see from this map from the Met Office, some areas of land will be 8 degrees hotter on average for a year. That's on average day and night throughout the year. When it's hot, so hot period in the middle of summer, it could be 12, 15, 17 degrees above what we would normally see now. And if you think about any agricultural system and you add a period of heat stress like that to it, it's going to require a huge amount of change. And for some parts of the world, it will be very difficult to maintain levels of agriculture. And that leads to all sorts of interesting things to do with whose food. Where does the food in the world get produced? Where does it get consumed? And as we at the moment import about 40% of the food, what's going to happen in the future? Will we still be able to access that? Will we be taking food from drought-prone developing world countries because they need the money and make them more impoverished? Lots of interesting questions there that we can talk about. Last reason business as usual is not an option is because of the need for maintaining what we get from the land. So if you think about a piece of agricultural land, we get food from it, yes, of course we do. We get water, we get flood defence, we get pollinators that and other other insects that support agricultural production. We have recreational amenity value, cultural value of the local landscape, biodiversity that has cultural value, this is the skylark, it produces energy, it stores carbon. All of these things are important, and somehow we have got to look ahead and maintain all of these things from land and not drive food production to ad infinitum to produce a world of very, very, very cheap food, because then we miss all of these things and these are societally important. And just as an example, this is some DEFRA data, DEFRA analysis. A farmer using a standard amount of nitrogen to grow an arable crop will make about £700 at current prices in terms of gross income. But in so doing, the nitrogen component alone, the fertiliser component alone, costs £330 to the environment. And at the moment, that cost is either lost, or it's paid by taxpayers, or it's paid by water companies to make the water clean. So that, the environment's been able to absorb a lot of that so far. Into the future, these costs relatively are going to go up. And somehow we've got to make sure that we maintain the environmental functioning at the same time as producing food. So, what does this mean? Our current agri-food system has locked us, in a sense, into something which, from the outside perspective, is not ideal. We have unsustainable production which produces lots of cheap food and creates a whole lot of environmental damage. It's wasted. We throw away about 30% of the food that we buy on average. We overconsume it. In the UK, these statistics suggest that we overeat by about 20% in terms of calories. Has high environmental impact. And we get locked into this way of doing things. So we expect food to be cheap and wastable and all the rest of that. And that's a kind of, that's a technically a gentleman's paradox. I call it the M25 model. No matter how many lanes you put on the M25, it is still always logjammed. No matter how much cheap food we produce, we will always want more, we will always waste more, we will always throw it away and overconsume it. So somehow, to make the world livable into the future and get to grips with climate change and get to grips with the ecosystem services, we have to switch to another model. And that is where we have sustainable production. The production of food occurs at a full cost in terms of we produce it in a way that does not create this huge externality of environmental damage. We buy less, we waste less, we consume healthily, has lower environmental impact, and somehow we get to grips with the demand that is driving us into a difficult position. And that is the whole mantra of sustainable nutrition. Clearly, the challenge is how do we go from here to there, but I'm sure we'll talk about that. And just as an example, this is agricultural land in the UK. Well, it's a land use map. Arable and pasture land, effectively in green. What we overconsume and what we waste is equivalent to the production of all the green area on this map, effectively. If we made wise consumption decisions, we would have so much more land to play with, we could be much more sustainable on a UK basis. But of course, that leads to a whole range of interesting questions about how we deal with things. So meat, for example. This is a map. Where the production is green, that is where food is eaten by humans. Where it's red, that is where food is produced and fed to livestock. I did an analysis in the global on the American system a few months ago. If an American family drives two cars, the average number of cars, a family of four, average numbers of cars, average mileage, eats the average amount of meat, they produce more carbon emissions, greenhouse gases, from the cows than they do from the cars. So changing lifestyle, reducing meat consumption is really powerful in terms of driving sustainability of the food system. And clearly there are all sorts of interesting questions, especially to do with prices of food, between eating whole foods, cooking at home and cheap ingredients versus eating processed food, and the environmental impacts that come from that, but the convenience that comes from that too, and choices around whether or not you want to have sugary beverages versus water. And all of these, of course, are associated in many ways with how much you can afford it. The rich clearly can afford almost anything, and we overeat and we overconsume and we throw stuff away, and the poor have to suffer. But the drivers into the future are that food has to become more expensive, otherwise the environmental costs now have too much. The food system is very complex. Lots and lots of vested interest in this. So I'll leave the question to discuss who has the power to change it. And just as an example of the food system, here is a map. This is Netherlands. And there are 65,000 farmers at one end, 16.7 million consumers at the other end. And right in the middle, you have four food logistics companies and five major supermarkets, through which all of that power is funneled. And that, to me, is quite an interesting diagram about power relationships. So, final slide, 1917, this famous picture from the US as they went to the First World War. All of these messages are effectively still alive and kicking today. And in a sense, that's quite criminal. And I hope in 100 years' time we aren't thinking through the same sorts of things, because by wasting our food, it creates a world of extreme inequality, extreme poverty, extreme hunger throughout the world.
Thank you, Tim. It's quite appropriate, I think, that we move on to Dale next, who is from the, am I right, Institute for Sustainable Consumption at the University of Manchester?
Yes.